7. Responsibility and decision. We have been loved, and we are loved. This is why we are. The moral law and morality, in other words, the concrete lack of proportion expressed in action of our person to the mystery of being, are judged by this first and fundamental law, acknowledging and accepting to be loved. We are loved. As a consequence, it follows that loving, in its essential form, in its supreme expression, is accepting to be loved, because all the rest flows from here. If I am loved, if I am because I am loved, then the great problem of my existence, of my being in the world, what makes it possible for my subject to become protagonist of a new world in which the eternal begins to be experienced in time, is my answer to the you that loves me, my correspondence, my valuing of what he created in me at my origin, precisely so that I could become aware of him who, in an exceptional way, decided to come amongst us, to live with me and to speak with me in a familiar way with his words, not copied from the dictionary, but drawn from the eternal, from the depths of being in which he has made me share. If I am because I am loved, I have to respond. Respondeo. This is the origin of responsibility. This is the endpoint of all the passionate emotion of our being, loaded with an eternal sensitivity, in movement towards the molding of the final form, which is the glory of Christ's face, in which even the smallest pebble will have its place. It is the word responsibility that assures the outcome of an experience of correspondence with the truth, with the fascination of beauty, with the moving experience of the good, with ineffable happiness. In its completeness, the greatness of the word responsibility is the main source of zest for life. If you are not responsible within what gives you pleasure or what attracts you, if you do not participate in it with some responsibility, then it is not yours. So heaven implies a decision of yours. It implies responsibility, because heaven is for man, and man is free. Responsibility is expressed as freedom's decision in front of the presence that is acknowledged as corresponding totally to one's destiny. But all too often, our way of thinking of freedom's decision is mistaken. As if it were an act I ultimately determine, as if I were the one to decide to answer yes to you, and to decide to say, "Your will be done." No, it is something else. The decision cannot be taken in the voluntary sense, as being synonymous with willpower. To understand its dynamics, let's think of the tax collector at the back of the temple. He didn't dare raise his eyes. He just said, "Lord, have mercy on me." And he sensed that his request would be accepted, that God would appreciate it, and that justice was thus satisfied. And let's think of St. Peter again. Why, when Christ asked him, "Do you love me?" was not even the betrayal of a few days earlier an obstacle? He answered yes at once, as the consequence of an awe that had begun at Capernaum, when Andrew his brother had brought him to Christ, and he had felt himself looked at by him in such a way as to be transfixed and defined in his humanness, in his character, so much so that he had his name changed. What was that exceptional impression, that initial awe made of, even psychologically speaking? The initial awe was a judgment that at once became an attachment. It was a judgment that stuck like glue, a judgment that affixed Peter and the disciples to him like glue. As each day passed, it added another coat of glue, and they could no longer free themselves. But you never obey the laws. All the Pharisees were scandalized by their master, because he went around with those who didn't keep the laws, and the apostles didn't know what to answer. "We don't know if we are obeying the laws or not, but we are attached to this man." It was not a sentimental attachment, an emotional phenomenon, but a phenomenon of reason, a manifestation of that reason that attaches you to the person before you, since it is a judgment of value. As you look at the person, you are taken up by a wonder full of esteem that attaches you to him. There is no hint of irrationality or forcing. "If we go away from you, where shall we go?" You have the words that explain life, Peter told him one day, impetuous as always. And after that affirmation, he got it all wrong again, so much so that Jesus told him, Go away from me, Satan, because you don't want me to do what my Father wants, but what you have in mind. What a humiliation. But the outcome was that Peter became even more attached to him. Peter's yes was neither the result of willpower nor the result of a decision of Simon the man. It was the emergence, the surfacing of a whole chain of tenderness and of adherence that was explained by the esteem he had for him. Therefore, it was an act of reason, which meant his only answer could be yes. This is the truest, the most genuine human mechanism, that which makes us better friends to those who are friends to us, that fills us with tenderness for our mother and admiration for our father. It increases with time and never stops. And it is not irrational. It is the only thing that is rational. For Peter, it was a friendship that did not depend on him, but had been brought to birth in him. For many would listen to Jesus and say, Wonderful. But then they would go away. This friendship, this tenderness, did not take root in them. It was not a decision as we normally conceive of it, which is to say, as the only way in which freedom goes into action. The nature of the decision is not a strong act of will, as in Alfieri's Want, Always Want, Want with All Your Might. Man is fragile and as weak as a child. Only if man acknowledges this does he begin to grow. So the decision springs forth as the establishment of a sympathy. The apostles followed Jesus because they were attached to him with a judgment that made them capable of a perfectly rational decision. Because where a relationship is generated that turns into a deep sympathy when an attachment born of an incomparable awe is renewed, rationality is an event.